Eddie's still here, and he's driving the bus. This week, we're speaking with Eddie Robar, the interim city manager.
We'll learn about what he plans to do for the time he'll be in the role.
Hi, I'm Troy.
I'm Mac.
And we're
Speaking Municipally.
Welcome back to Speaking Municipally, episode 262. I had people ask me last week, well, when are you going to interview Eddie Robar, the new city manager? You always tend to interview city managers. And it made me think, in the duration of this podcast, we're almost 100%, but did we ever talk to Linda Cochran? I don't think we did.
I don't think we ever had her on the show as a guest, but we've certainly talked to her and she knew about us, but I don't think she was ever a guest. So we're not quite 100%, but pretty good.
The more city managers we get, the higher our percentage rate will be. So the takeaway here is we want city council to hire and fire a lot of city managers to bump up our stats. That's the official position of Taproot Edmonton, right?
Sure. Why not? Yeah.
Of course, Speaking Municipally is a publication of Taproot Edmonton, and this week we want to talk to you about Nate Celebrates. Nate is going to be recognizing several alumni, friends, and industry partners through the 2024 Nate Celebrates Awards. The awards recognize champions, community builders, mentors, visionaries, and leaders who have a lasting impact on the community through their spirit, dedication, and generosity. This year's cohort includes Ray Pisani, former chair of Nate's Board of Governors, and Arlo Maverick, an award-winning musician, promoter, and filmmaker. You can read all about the award recipients and learn more at nate.ca/celebrate.
We also want to remind you that we're doing a live show all about housing, and it's going to be on May 30th at 7 p.m. at the Foundry Room in the Oliver Exchange building. It's free, and you can find the link to the registration in the show notes. We'd love to see you there.
And I think we have no more time for preamble because we got a big guest coming on the podcast. We want to talk to the interim city manager, Eddie Robar. Welcome to the show, Eddie.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on here.
So right off the bat, Andre, what were the circumstances of him leaving? It was acrimonious. Is that stay silent to confirm it?
I think Andre's had a long public career and he got to his 40 years and he's now living the high life in another chapter.
Have you spoken to him since he left the role? Did he give you any parting advice for your new role?
I speak to Andre often, actually. So, he certainly is still in communication with the team. He's kind of moved on to a new role now. But I think for us, if I have questions about maybe commitments or something like that that happened during his tenure, obviously I can reach out to him and he gives me kind of what he was dealing with at the time. So still have some background there that I can tap into as a resource if need to. So I'll talk to him on occasion for sure.
Well, and of course, you are now the interim city manager at the City of Edmonton, upgraded from acting, which was, I believe, supposed to be a bit of a longer period while they searched for a different interim city manager. What was the story with that? How did you get into the role of interim? Was this something where you stepped up and said, hey, no, I actually want to do this?
Councillors and the mayor, they had a small group of folks that were grouped together to kind of look at who they should appoint as the next interim city manager until the recruitment is complete. We have quite capable DCMs in this group, so it could have been any one of four of us.
Initialism alert. DCM means Deputy City Manager.
That were permanent DCMs at the time, so all were acceptable options, and I could have worked for any of them as well, and looked forward to the selection they made, and obviously they had different interviews with each person and chose me. So honored by that choice, obviously, and it's a big crown to carry for now as we kind of work through some of the challenges the city has, but looking forward to that challenge for sure.
And you say for now, obviously council is engaging in a search for the permanent city manager. Have you filed an application? Is this a job that you might want to be taking on full time?
You know, how many times have I been asked that question? You know, it's funny. I'm at a point in my career where I'm looking at different options too. And obviously city manager was on that trajectory, maybe not as soon as this is kind of coming about, but I don't think those things happen when you want them to. So for me, I'm very much focused on working over the next few months with what I have and kind of working towards that. I haven't decided if I'm going to put my hat in the ring just yet. I think there's some work. I want to make sure that I'm effective and, you know, that I'm doing the right things for the city and that I have an impact. And, you know, if I get that feeling that that's the path and trajectory that's on, then yeah, I may throw my hat in the ring for that work, but I really haven't decided yet.
I was going to say, don't wait too long because the search might be moving quickly, but I feel like maybe we've talked on this podcast recently that this council doesn't move particularly quickly. So maybe you're fine after all. Before we get into what you're going to do in your new role, maybe just for listeners who are less familiar with you, can you give us just a bit of background on your time at the city of Edmonton and the various hats you've worn?
Yeah, sure thing. I think, I came from the East Coast to Edmonton. I was running Halifax Transit in the East Coast for a period of time, came to run ETS here in 2016. So I ran ETS for about 5 years, hopped over to the fleet and facilities portfolio as the branch manager in both of those portfolios, spent a short term in parks and roads as well, all on the operational side of the fence. And then about a year ago was appointed as the deputy city manager of city operations. So most of my career has been on the operational side of the fence, working in various capacities, but have a broad scope. So, and in city operations is about half of the organization today here in the city of Edmonton. So it's about 5,600 employees of the 11,000 that we have in the city.
You mentioned 2016 is when you came over from Halifax, and I was looking this up recently, and I thought it was really fascinating that at the time you were the seventh high-ranking manager the city of Halifax to leave in a matter of months. And now you're on the flip side of that. You're one of the few remaining after Edmonton, it feels like, has had this exodus of senior leaders. So I wonder how you feel about that. And if you have any, you know, lessons that Edmonton can learn from Halifax. Have you kept up with folks from there? Did it all work out in the end?
Yeah, I keep in touch with all the folks back in Halifax for sure. I think I left as this was an opportunity for me. I had some family here in the city of Edmonton, so it was just a convenient kind of move for me. I loved where I worked in the city, so my departure from the city of Halifax was an amicable one. I loved that I could have worked there for the last 20 years of my career for sure. Obviously, the opportunity here, bigger city, I moved for that. I was a city builder, loved city building, loved where the city was going at the time, and really looking it forward to where that was going to take me in my career. So, you know, a city that's three times the size, you know, see the broader sophistication of growing my career. So that's kind of why I moved here. And I think, you know, on our end of it, like the job markets are hot too. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, post pandemic and where executive positions lie and, you know, the talents that people get in cities and are marketable quality. So that seeing people moving on to different roles is not something that is abnormal in these positions. And certainly right now with the job market the way it is for those kind of level of positions, it's not surprising on some of those. So I think things move on, new opportunities exist, people move into new roles and they take out those opportunities. And I love to see that growth. So I think from the city perspective, you know, having new blood and new ideas is a great way to kind of affect change too. So,
well, speaking of 2016, when you came over, we found a nice quote from you in 2016 that says, quote, "Smart Fare is something you'll be hearing about in the next little while." It's certainly been a little while since 2016, but we finally do have Smart Fare around. You were the branch manager of ETS for the vast majority of the duration of us trying to get Smart Fare in place and in general failing to do so. What was the story with there? And are you celebrating every night when you tap your art card?
Yes, I am. It was a long road. And it's funny because, you know, the ARC system itself is a bit unique. So when you look at traditional fare payment systems, you know, it doesn't really have this regional component to it. And I think, you know, the complexities of integrating different regional components and regional systems into one system, it's not so much the hardware as this is kind of that background software conversation. So when you're trying to integrate two different fare type systems, three, four, five different fare type systems into one code backend, when you tap your card, you know, are you coming from St. Albert? Are you transferring to an Edmonton bus? Are you transferring back from a Strathcona bus? And who gets the money? Where does that get deposited? When does that go to where? Like, these kinds of regional systems don't exist. And it's probably one of the first of its kind. Great thing about Edmonton is they're very innovative and willing to try and risk on different things. And those things sometimes provide a bit of complexity. So it did take a lot longer than I anticipated it taking. However, tapping my art card today is definitely something I look forward to and certainly have enjoyed seeing that come to fruition for sure.
And you're a transit nerd, right? You're a transit rider. I saw you on the first train of the New Valley Line. Did you get any cake that Troy brought?
I didn't get the cake, but I honestly have been on every new line. I've ever had in any city I've been in the very first trip in the morning. So I pride myself on making sure that anything new that comes to the city, especially transit related, I'll be on the first out the door.
What I'm hearing you say is that ETS merch is coming then, now that you're in the top job, right?
Yeah. So it's interesting. It's one of the things we put on our revenue streams. And I love the fact that we could have a store and people buy that stuff, man. So every city I'm in, I pick up something from each city I'm in on their transit system and definitely look to experience what they have to offer. And I keep telling people all the time, you can really tell a good city by its transit system. So if you can come to a transit or a city and be able to kind of get everywhere you want to go on a transit system, I think that's the goal. And making sure that we have those connections in place so folks that visit us don't need a car whenever they show up. And I think that's what we're aiming for sure.
So having run the transit system for quite a while. I mean, we've talked to Carrie Houghton McDonald, and she's told us about, you know, some of the lapses in service hours that we have in the Edmonton transit system and, you know, a wish list of things that she would want. You were in her role. You ran the transit system for a good half decade, and now you have the keys to the castle. Is it tempting to just, you know, spin up a procurement for 50 extra buses, hire a bunch of transit operators and just really get the service going?
I wish it were that easy. I think my goal is about strategy, and I've always been a bit of a strategist when it comes to that stuff. So when I look at the transit system itself, it's not only about the transit system, it's about city building. So, you know, how we build the city is really how we should be looking at how we deliver our services. So I use the analogy of infill. Like, if we're looking at infill, you know, the strategy around our 4-year budget has to be really around what does infill do to us? So if we've got 100,000 people coming in here each year, where are they locating? What does that mean for the city? What is the things that we should be looking at when we go through that work? So transit is one of those things. Obviously, if you're infilling, you're going to get congestion. How do you move people through the mobility network is super important. So those kinds of things is something you certainly would look at. But also things like traffic operations. The growth of traffic operations over time hasn't really happened in the city here, and how you move people through that city as well. So when you look at savings and look at tax rates and trying to keep tax rates low, you know, obviously how quickly we move people through the system itself and looking at traffic operations helps us keep those costs low as well. So, you know, not necessarily if you get those impacts on transit, do you always put a new bus in place? But if you could change the light sequences or something like that move it quicker and get it more reliable or more on time, you can avoid a labor cost or something like that. So when you look at those kinds of things and being strategic about the approach, I think it's more about how are we connected as a group and what investments do we make to make sure that we're building the city in the way that we plan to.
Well, you've got an I in your title. You're the interim city manager. And, you know, to some extent, it might feel like you're the babysitter stepping in. You don't have the full authorization to go as hard as a city manager as maybe a permanent one might. Do you feel that way? Do you plan on making big changes, big swings? Or are you sort of just a steward in the interim?
I don't feel like I'm just warming a seat. So, you know, I've been given the keys to this group, which is great. I think we've got a really good, robust ECM team. The deputy city managers are great. They help us kind of work on the strategy, a portion of this, but we've got the ability to make impact. And I don't think we're going to sit idle on anything. I think we've got, you know, some direction on where we want to go. We want to refine those priorities with council, make sure that we know what we're looking at the next little bit. Obviously, you know, six months could be a year, could be more. We don't know what that looks like just yet. So sitting on our seats and not doing anything, I think is not an option. There is a lot of work to do, a lot of advancement. Our city is growing quickly. Looking forward to being able to have an impact, you know, move things forward. I keep telling people I'm in the best seat in the house because, you know, if I mess it all up, I just go back to my old job. So, And I'm okay with that. I think, you know, I think it gives us some license to be a bit bold sometimes and push a little bit to make sure that we're doing the right things and moving the city forward and not pausing for sure.
I think it's interesting to hear you say that we have this great group of DCMs, because from the outside looking in, it would seem like maybe that's not the case. We lost maybe some institutional knowledge. We had some longtime, you know, widely respected leaders who are no longer in those roles. When we talked to your predecessor, he told us he was in no hurry to fill some of those vacancies. elaborate for us on what that senior leadership team looks like at the moment, because it kind of seems like perhaps it's not as well resourced as it has been in the past.
New blood comes new opportunities and new ideas. And I think we've got a good group of people. Obviously, we have a great CFO making great suggestions on how we move things forward for council. We've got, you know, our urban planning development, Kim Petrin. You know, we've got Jennifer Flamin out in our community services group. And I think those are the core of the group itself. So when you look at the city itself between community services, obviously we've got some IAS turnover that we're going through, but
initialism alert, IIS is integrated infrastructure services. That's all things like roadways, infrastructure, LRT expansion, Blatchford, the like.
As far as the delivery of services that people see on the street, the core of that group is still there, whether it's me or Craig McEwen, who's filling in, coming from Parks and Roads as the new DCM, you know, has really a proven track record. And I think the what we see around the table is people with track record. That for me is what excites me. So when I look at that group, I know that they're doing a really good bunch of work that we can really hit home with council and have some pretty significant impact, I think. I'm not at all concerned about that. I think that the organization and where we're headed, whether it's me in the chair or one of those other three DCMs, they could have easily sat in this chair as well. We're tied together pretty tightly, and I think we have an idea of how we want to kind of advance this going forward and making sure that we're doing what Edmontonians would expect us to do. That to me is probably the most important is making sure that we're delivering on those expectations. One of my record has always been about managing expectations. So, you know, what we can deliver for what we have and making sure that people are well aware of what they can get from us for the tax money that they're putting in.
Are there other senior leadership vacancies right now, though? Like, is there people that either you or the next permanent city manager is looking to bring on board?
Yeah, so we've got the IAS position or their DCM is Adam's old job. So that one's still vacant and in an acting role. That one we're looking to obviously advance. And I think that's the contingent on, you know, if this is 6 months, do you push that forward? If it's a year, then do you push it forward? So we're kind of waiting to see where the dust settles on the recruitment of the new city manager. If it happens quickly, we'd probably sit on that one a bit and let the new person, whomever that might be, pick who they want for a team member, obviously. But if this is something that's going to take a year, I think we have to make other choices. So we're kind of tossing that up right now on how quickly we'll move on those positions. Got some other ones we need to fill in there too. So
when the news came out that you were going to be in the role as interim, one of the things you said to the media was that you thought about the importance of addressing workplace culture at the city. And that seems to me to be a similar kind of conversation. You know, if there's a new city manager in 6 months, maybe it's something that they need to tackle. If it's going to be a longer period of time, then maybe it makes sense for you to do some preliminary work on that. I don't know. What's your view on that? What did you mean by, you know, addressing workplace culture beyond obviously just at the time we had just wrapped up labor negotiations and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think those things have an impact. So I think those have lasting impact. So just because we wrap up labor negotiations, when you get that close to job action, I think those same sentiments that you'd get if you were on strike are still exist in the organization. So cultural impact, what does it mean from a leadership perspective and, you know, value of employees and making sure that they know that we value them. And I think there's, you know, some of that animosity kind of construes itself in the organization itself. And I'm not naive to that. I've been through a strike before in my life, had to kind of recover from that, you know, over, and it takes time to do that, but it's not something you can just pump the brakes on and wait for somebody new. I think that's something that I want to jump in wholly and make sure that we're addressing it right away. You know, the good thing about me growing up to this organization too is there's stuff that I look at and I'm like, wow, man, I would change that if I was in that seat. And the great thing is I'm in that seat now and I get to do that. And
can you give us an example? Like, what's something you would change now that you can related to that?
You know, some stuff that's maybe a bit red tape for the internal workings of the way we do our stuff and approvals and things like that. And I think I'm really focused on building trust and confidence in our leadership group and empowering employees. And, you know, I want to drive that back down the organization and let the people who we pay a lot of money to do things do that. That's mostly what's important to me, is just kind of eliminating some of the red tape of stuff that, you know, people think I need to do as a CAO and maybe I don't need to do as much. So those are kind of quick ones that I could think of. I don't want to get into specifics just yet because I'm working through that with the team. So I think, you know, I I like to work through the groups myself and have conversations with them and understand kind of what are those things that, you know, that bother you and how do we kind of get through that? Very open and transparent about, you know, taking really constructive feedback. I think that for me, it goes a long way with staff when you can listen and kind of make effective change. And like, that's my opportunity here, I think, is to really look at that corporate culture and say, you know, how can I have an impact on that in a short period of time and move the needle a little bit further to the right as we start going through this competition, but maybe setting this up well for the next person or whomever that might be at the end. So
speaking on some of these culture pieces, one of the specific action items that we learned in our conversation with Andre when he was on was that one of the culture aspects he was going to concretely act on was to provide formal anti-racism training for the executive leadership team at the city. Did that ever happen? Did you, as part of the executive leadership team, receive concrete and formal anti-racism training?
I have not. That is still in the cards. We have our anti-racism group that, and we're setting up a high-level office right now to go through that work. We have about 130 actions, and that is one of those actions. So we're kind of just going through laying out what's that kind of concrete action plan as we start going through this. Obviously, the kind of turmoil in the last little bit has disrupted a bit of that path, and we're just getting things back on track now and set back up. So I think we're in good shape to kind of hit the ground running on all of the actions that we have coming our way, but we're excited to kind of continue down that path for sure.
Clarification alert. Since we recorded, the office of the city manager reached out to say that while Eddie Robar himself hasn't taken this anti-racism training, that's because he was only a branch manager, not part of the executive leadership team as a deputy city manager at the time. In 2021, all of the then deputy city managers did take anti-racism training as part of the executive leadership team.
Related to workplace culture, you kind of talked a bit about when the news broke about transparency. And I wonder if you could help us understand what you mean by transparency. Like, how can, what, in what ways do you see the city or administration becoming more transparent with, I presume you meant residents or Edmontonians?
Yeah, I think, you know, I can give a concrete example. I think when I was in city operations, we really kind of focused on our parks and roads and our snow and ice program. And, you know, one thing that spent a lot of time doing is kind of evaluating, you know, whether or not we were meeting our objectives or what the expectations of Edmontonians were. And, you know, we got a lot from counselors of saying, like, this is, doesn't seem like we're getting the targets and really being transparent about, you know, what we could actually achieve with the equipment that we had and the people that we had. Going through that analysis, and to be fair, we weren't as mature an organization then as we are now around service lines of business and, you know, how we deliver those services and are we achieving the objectives? Because if we were, when those standards were set 20, 30 years ago, we would have known we couldn't meet those objectives then. And when they were established from day one, there was no way for us to meet those objectives. And I think that plays into corporate culture too. And when you look at and what we're serving for Edmontonians, so when people say, you know, I don't see a plow on my street or I haven't seen it in a little while, you know, it should have been here by now. And we're saying, oh yeah, it'll be there or it's coming. It's not coming when they expect it to come. And when you do the math and you do the numbers on what we have for equipment, what we had for people, there was just no way for us to achieve the outcomes that we had set for standards. And there was no way for us to ever achieve that outcome. And I think for us, being very forthright and putting that on the table and saying, you know, this is what we can actually achieve with what we have for resourcing. And then people look at you and say, wow, like that's the first time I've heard, you know, the city actually tell me what I'm seeing on the street. And I think that landed well. And I think it, you know, it's not the greatest thing to say. You know, it's obviously when you look at, you know, a service standard and expectation, Edmontonians have a certain level of expectation and we're not meeting that expectation. It's pretty tough one, tough pill to swallow sometimes. But it's this establishment of how do we sustain ourselves going forward. And I think when you look at city building and how you build cities and how you maintain them, I think that's a big part of this growth concept and how many people come to the city, the growth of our roads and the sprawl of our city and making sure that we're keeping up with that. So I always look at things in like three buckets, which is the maintain, sustain, grow. And in the maintenance side of it, you're looking at what does it take for us today and what does it take for tax dollars for us today to run the system that we have and where are those gaps and making sure we're plugging those gaps. But that's just today. So when you look at, you know, sustainability of that city over a length of time, like it's tomorrow, a week from now, a year from now, there's a certain inherent growth and costs that go along with just maintaining what we have today. let alone, you know, we get new streets and all the stuff that comes with that and influx of people, the sustainability of the system that we have, you have to maintain that. And there's a maintenance that goes into that every single year, and be very clear with council about what does that look like? What does that look like in a 4-year budget? What does it mean to a tax? What does it mean for implications? And then you layer on top of that the growth, which is there's two sets of growth. One is growth of just people coming in and the growth of our roads and structures and things like that. But there's also like that kind of what I call the sexy growth on top of that. So like, what are the pet projects we want to do? What are the things we want to build? What are the rec centers we want to do? You know, as it, from an Edmontonian perspective, you know, when I walk out my door, I want to see that the well-manicured city and, you know, the things that come with that, that make it easy for me to say people are doing their job. And when that's not happening, you know, when you're doing those other growth projects that are kind of the nice to haves, people look at you and they say, why are you doing that? You know, if you're building a $500 million rec facility, but you can't cut my grass. It's the simple things in life sometimes that give you the most flexibility. And I think that's a bit of what the flavor I bring is, you know, getting back to basics a little bit, understanding the impact of what Edmontonians are, what they care about, and looking to drive some of that message and conversation to the council table and make sure that we're delivering on that.
So help us understand this a little bit then, because if there's work to do on core services, which is what I'm hearing you say, but you've been the person ultimately responsible next to the city manager for those core services over the last little while.
Yeah.
What's the disconnect? Is it that council didn't give clear enough direction? Is it, as you're saying, the city admin just wasn't as transparent as they needed to be about what was possible? Like, what, you know, I think if you ask the average Edmontonian today, they would say what you just said, right? How could you spend $100 million over here and this thing in front of my house is not happening? I don't think they would say, yeah, 99% on core services. So what's the gap there in your view?
Well, I think it's shifting now. So our focus on service lines started with Zone Ice. That was probably 2 years ago. We've kind of moved that into turf conversations. So you have to go service line by service line. We have 73 service lines of business. So for us to evaluate, go through that, see where we're at with our people, budget, time, equipment, you know, how we're playing that, how we're using that work and that role, and how we stack up to the service standards we have. It's not something that happens overnight. We've not helped ourselves through the pandemic. We kind of took steps back through that. And that's on both sides of the fence. I think I look at, you know, we could have done a better job as administration to really identify the impact of, you know, some of the service cuts that went through there. And that put us in a position where, you know, our services were getting eroded, and you see that on the street. And then we get back at the end of the pandemic and recovery is a lot harder than it used to be with inflationary pressures and cost of living and what is it, and labor costs and all the stresses that puts on a budget. So to recover that, it costs you more, right? So looking through how quickly you can move to those, we're moving in increments. So, you know, we started with snow and ice. We had a turf report go recently. We've got to work on traffic operations, things on our, how we build our projects. You know, we're talking about, you know, shrub beds and things like that come up. And if you can't operationally do all the weeding that's required in there, then there's no reason for us to build more shrub beds to make that problem worse. So we're connecting all the dots on these things as we go through. So that stuff is changing. It's not changing as fast as everybody like it to, because we don't live in a fiscal world where we're unconstrained as well. So we're trying to work that in and those changes into the fiscal realities that we have today.
Your comment about don't build shrub beds if you can't cut the shrub beds sounds a lot like what Councillor Carton-Mel has recently asked at a motion at council, which is the operating costs of capital. This is what Mac and I opined will be the reopening the bike lane debate motion. But do you think that we need to take a harder look at our capital infrastructure projects and how they impact our operating requirements, and maybe factor that in more fulsomely to the capital discussion?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a connection between operating and capital that we need to look at all the time. I think they're both intertwined. The minute you build a piece of infrastructure, it has to be maintained. You know, where we are in our renewal, the vehicles that we have, the buildings that we build, you know, the older they get, the more we have to maintain them. And there's an economic replacement point to be had there too. So having a whole look at not only our capital infrastructure, but also our rolling stock, and making sure that we have replacement strategies in place, building strategies in place that cover the cost, and that we're offloading those assets at the right point in time. We're not doing that right now. We had a report go on buses recently on just the impact of the transit fleet on the service. It took cost extra to keep those older fleet vehicles around, but it costs a lot to replace them from a capital perspective. Our debt ceiling is pretty tight. You know, for us to be able to do that work, it makes it more complicated. So these are all things that we need to think about as we start working through, you know, what is the impact of that work that we do? So if we're going to build, you know, 10 facilities in a year, we need to be able to make sure that we can maintain those 10 facilities as they onboard. And obviously those costs get, or they get bigger as the time goes on in those facilities too. So how do we plan for that over time? How do we make sure that we have the maintenance costs in place to kind of deal with those concerns? And I think that's where this people, budget, time, equipment, or this, you know, cost of service studies that we do and that we're doing now help us to be way more clear at identifying those challenges and costs to the city as we start looking at what impacts tax.
I'm imagining a typical Edmontonian, if such a thing exists, listening to this conversation, and they might be thinking, is it really novel that we consider the ongoing costs of maintaining the things we build? Like, is that something we're not, why aren't we already doing that? Might be one thing that comes to mind. And I can appreciate that, you know, we can get more advanced and sophisticated with our analysis over time. But the other thing they might be hearing is, you know, you're talking about going through all 73 lines of business, evaluating the impacts of capital on operating. Isn't that program and service review, council's 2%, OP12? Haven't we constantly been doing that? Like, what is there any room left to evaluate this stuff? Haven't we done too much of that already?
Well, I think it's a bit different than that. I think there's a bit of different of like what we're looking at here is what is the expectation of our service standards and can we deliver on that? I think we're not looking at, you know, where is the cost savings in A or B. It's really about, are we delivering what Edmontonians are expecting us to deliver? That's a different conversation than what you're talking about. So what I'm looking at is, you know, if I'm a regular Edmontonian driving down the street and I have a service that's provided to me, I'm expecting a certain level of service because we're telling them this is the level that you're going to get. And the real question is, are we delivering on all of those services? And I think the challenge that we've had in the past is, you know, the city has had rapid growth, large sprawl, and hasn't kept pace with those services. So we look at stretching that thinner. It's like an elastic band. The longer you stretch it, you know, it's you're not getting more of them. It's just stretching your resources thinner as the city grows. And I think we've got to look at what's the impact of that. And I think the impact is just what we discussed. Snow and ice gets a little bit less frequent, which doesn't help us in the long run. I think we got to do a better job of identifying that for council so they understand the impact of approving 10 new subdivisions looks like and the impact of that. But that the impact of that is, you know, we need people in there to cut the grass. We need people in there to plow the streets. We need people to fill the potholes and kind of build that up. Or we need to change the expectation of what they expect to get delivered. But we have gone through, you know, some lean years here of light tax implications, obviously not now, but I'm not naive to that. But those have impact on where we are as a city today and where we can, you know, drive the conversation about services in the future and how we can catch up to where we are, where we need to be and kind of go beyond that to hit the expectations that people are thinking about.
We've talked about snow and ice a couple times, and I'm looking outside on the final day before May, and it's dumping snow in Edmonton. Great. Love that for us. I believe the timelines do line up that you were in snow and ice right around the time the city tried the, I'll call it experiment of let's plow down to bare pavement and leave windrows everywhere. And I think we're going to call that a failed experiment, but I wonder if you could take us inside a little bit of what happened there and what lessons did the city learn from plowing to bare pavement in neighborhoods? And are we going to do something like that again?
So I came in just after that.
Okay, so not your problem. Not your monkeys, not your rodeo.
I dealt with the end of it. So I was there at the end of it. And I think, yeah, it's certainly a challenging situation. I think there's always ideas and, you know, some are great ideas and some aren't great ideas. And that one was rough. It was rough on a lot of things. It was rough on Edmontonians. It certainly was rough on the equipment, you know, and trying to get down to bare pavement. There are cities in this country that go to bare pavement. Halifax is one of those cities that go to bare pavement on residential roads all over. But you pay for that too, right? So, you know, it's the cost of that doing that business. You can't do that as a one-off. I think on the snow and ice programs, if you're going to go bare pavement, you have to do it consistently. It has to be every single time it snows. It can't be a program that happens in the middle of it. I think, you know, learned lots from that, heard lots from that. I don't plan on going back there again. And I'm pretty sure that this council will not go back there again.
I like this idea of aligning, you know, our services and what we spend with the expectations that Edmontonians have. But snow's like a really good example. I don't know what our current standard is. Is it 5 centimeters, 10 centimeters, 48 hours? I have no idea. It sounds really hard to do because I bet if you go and ask Edmontonians, you know, when would you like your potholes filled or how would you like your snow cleared? They'd say yesterday and completely. So how do you actually get alignment with what Edmontonians expect? How do you know what that is?
Yeah, it's a balance. I mean, we hear from Edmontonians every day when we do it wrong. So that's a great indicator. You know, especially for our Stone Age program, you know, some of the challenges that we had, we had equipment, we didn't have people, right? And one thing we knew is, you know, let's start moving the needle to the right and see where we start to get some traction with folks. And what happened with us with Snow and Ice program is we moved the needle to the right. We got an influx of cash from council to say, okay, let's try this. Let's put all equipment on the road, see what the impact is, and see how Edmontonians receive that. And I think our litmus test is always Edmontonians. And I think, you know, we moved that needle to the right. We had far less complaints. We had much cleaner streets. Then we dialed it back a little bit. Then things didn't go so well. And now we're moving it back up again. And I think we've got, you know, a trajectory on snow and ice where it's going to be in a place in 2026 where I think that the program will probably be an adequate place for Edmontonians and what they expect to see on the street. But it is a bit of a, you know, a balance and a test of dimension with citizens on response and are we hitting the mark? And at the end of the day, you can go Cadillac all the way to the right. You spend a ton of money and maybe you're over engineering the work. So in this case, we kind of incrementally improved the service to a point where we feel we're hitting the mark and we'll be improving it in the next couple of years as well with some council cash coming our way. So we're excited about that and what it means to the Snow and Ice program itself. But really that litmus test is the people that like traverse our streets every single day. And the funny thing about that is, you know, if you have a winter like we had just had, you know, very little snow, you don't always get to get that litmus test either. So, and then sometimes you think maybe I have too much on the street, but I like erring on the side of caution, you know, and having the services out there and the expectations met and we're ready for the next snowfall. So this was an odd snowfall year for us. And then obviously at the end of April here, we're seeing some of the oddness continue, but not helping golfers in golf season. But I think we're really focused on delivering good services. And when I say the culture side, like this is the impact of culture too. So when we ask people to, in our groups, in our workplace, to achieve expectations, service standards that are unachievable, and you're putting that on the employee, I think that is a disservice to the group. So when we look at that and we're looking at our own internal communications, talking to our staff and they're saying, there's no way I can do what you're asking me to do. And that's our service standard that we're putting out to the public. You know, when we talk about service expectations and what that means, it's just as much about workload on employees and being real with what they can achieve and not putting out standards that that's unachievable and drives them to a standard that they just can't complete. And I think that realization and that work on the culture side of it is about making sure that we're not driving our staff to a level of service standard that just is unachievable.
This is not something you might have been appraised of because it happened as we were going into recording. The province had announced a basically $5 million cut. The province is no longer going to be funding the low-income transit pass, or at least the provincial portion of the low-income transit pass in the city of Edmonton and the city of Calgary. And I know your predecessor, Andre Corbald, had, you know, said he had a very close relationship and a close working relationship with the province. When something like this happens, I assume it's a surprise to you because it was a surprise to our mayor, but work us through, what's your work plan on this? How do you handle this announcement coming down? What is your next steps on this process?
Yeah, obviously we're disappointed in what we've heard. I mean, I think, you know, I was a part of creating that right transit program in the transit space. And I honestly believe it's probably one of the highlights of my career of impact, you know, mobility, giving people mobility. I think that program, you know, when we went through some of the experiences that people had, they said, we used to choose between groceries and our bus pass. And now I don't have to do that. Like that's the amount of impact that this program has. So about importance, it's of the utmost importance to me, to the city, you know, to our passengers, making sure that we have mobility for everyone and giving people access is a big part of this program objective. And it is really meeting those objectives. And post-pandemic, tough times, the program has grown. substantially, and we're seeing, you know, 25,000 people taking advantage of these programs a month. That's important. And I think just sitting back and saying, hey, we accept that, I don't think we accept that. I think there's an element of us having to have conversations with the province and hoping to be able to push them to reconsider that. I think Calgary is the same. It impacts both Calgary and Edmonton. I did get this information before. As far as being a surprise, this is not too much of a surprise to me. I think we've been since the budget been trying to find out if this is going to be part of the go forward, and we really weren't getting any clear answers for obviously since budget time until today. So next steps for us is obviously informing council. We've sent information to council on the impact of this and what does it mean for us, and obviously puts more pressure on our budget, which isn't ideal and doesn't leave us a ton of options. So, you know, when we go through the options that we do have for us, it's, you know, it's cancel the program, it's adjust the criteria in the program itself to have less people in it so it doesn't cost the city as much, or flip the bill for the provincial portion of the cash. And then that's it's a rate conversation again, you know, and we're already at 8.9%. So when you think about a $5 million bill or $4.5 million bill, it's a substantial impact. And we have to go through the options, sit down with council and decide how we can look at programs and that what we have, and if there's something we can stop doing to start doing some of this stuff, and what's the importance level of this program over some, maybe some of the other stuff we have too. So there's a lot to go through and unpack with this one. The one thing I just want to make sure that, like, it's not something that is sitting on the side of our desk. It's something that we're going to attack the problem head on and see what we can come up with. But there would be nothing better than the province reconsidering what they've just put out, for sure.
You might look at all these recent announcements and feel like the province, the government of Alberta, are the ones setting the agenda, so to speak, and that Edmonton and Calgary have been forced into very reactive positions. And, you know, Troy and I get out and we hear people talk about how Edmonton feels maybe like it doesn't have a direction or vision right now, like the city feels a little bit lost, despite what the owner of the new Phipps McKinnon building said. He's quite happy about how things are going. Most people seem to feel like there's a gap here, there's a disconnect. You know, Calgary had a really high tax increase, but they also introduced a new slogan and brand, and they're all about blue sky, and they seem like they've got some cohesiveness. I'm just curious about your take on all of that. Do you feel like, you know, there's a lack of direction or vision here? Do you feel like that we're being forced into a very reactive position, or do you have a different take on all of that?
I think I've spent my career trying to find ways to connect with different levels of government. So, you know, in transit, you kind of have to do that. You look at whatever party's in place right now, and you try and work your way to find those common grounds and threads that you can pull on to try and achieve the objectives that you're trying to achieve as a transit system. And, you know, I've spent 20 years doing those kinds of things. And I think that's kind of what I can bring to the table here is common ground is there's common ground between us and the province. I think that, you know, finding those threads that we can agree on and move forward with is something that's definitely doable. Do I think the strategy of the city needs to be a little more focused? We've got stuff on the horizon where we've got to, you know, things we want to do is build up our industrial tax base, things that help us drive down the tax rate. So what are the things that we can do strategically as a city to invest our time and effort into to try and make sure that we don't get these 8.9% tax rates in the future? That's one of them. You know, I think looking at different ways to look at economic conditions that we have in the city and building out what Edmonton has to offer is another aspect of stuff that we can start to maybe exploit and leverage, whether it's things like hydrogen economy, which is at the conference down here, huge opportunity for the city of Edmonton, huge opportunity for the tax base here, huge opportunity for the citizens and employment and things like that. So, you know, as far as driving direction, obviously that's the like, how far do you go? That's one of those questions of interim city manager versus, you know, city manager. And I think that's the things that we have to toy with a little bit is, you know, how much do we push down that road and start establishing this framework going forward? And I think there's a lot of appetite for that though, in terms of not dismissing that and sitting on our hands and not moving that forward. I think we have some ideas around how to kind of manage that. You know, obviously we've got to sit down with council, walk through what does that mean and what are some of the ideas that we are bringing to the table to as administration to see how we can help council with tax rate information, keeping it low, and then driving some more programming into the work to make sure that we have a kind of guiding North Star on what does it mean to be Edmonton for year one, year five, year 10, you know, and building up the city plan in a way that makes sense. So
if we're talking about the problems in the city of Edmonton, they all tend to seem to just like evaporate in the public consciousness when the Oilers are in the playoffs. When the Oilers are in the playoffs, everything seems to be going fine. And they are now. Are you an Oilers fan? Are you watching the playoffs? Are you staying up till, what is it, 3 a.m. every time they're in a game in overtime? Have you been following with that?
I go to every watch party. So I've been to one game of the playoffs. I've sat down and watched every single minute of every game they played all season. So I am a huge fan of hockey. My daughter's a high level hockey player playing for Nate. So I think, you know, I enjoy hockey. I think it's the biggest thing that's kept me in the city. I came here in 2016 and, you know, in 2017, the Oilers went for the cup run and this city became electrified. And I think at that point in time, I'm like, I'm in my happy place. You know, coming from Halifax and not having an NHL team and not feeling that kind of spark of the playoffs and what does it mean to be in an NHL city, I think is something that I hold dearly to myself. And I will be an Oilers fan till I die.
And oh man, they've tried in Halifax, haven't they?
Yes, they have. We do have a Quebec Major Junior team that won a couple Memorial Cups, but it's not the same as, you know, hopefully an NHL Stanley Cup someday, but I'm excited about what the future is for them and certainly what it does to the city and the changes that it means to Edmontonians and watching just an electric city just become even more electrified as every round goes through. So
the other major thing that Edmontonians like to spend their time on besides watching hockey is, of course, sharing their opinions about public art. What are your thoughts on the Talus Dome?
It's a shiny bunch of balls and, you know, I think it's, you look at every city's got something in there. Like, you know, we go to Calgary and they got their rings and, you know, we got the Talus balls. And I enjoy the fact that we have stuff to talk about and art always gives you an opportunity to talk about something.
It's a shiny bunch of balls. That's the pull quote for the episode. We got it.
Nailed it.
Well, Eddie, it was a great talking to you. Thank you for joining us on the podcast. For whatever period of time you'll be city manager, you said it may be 6 months, it may be 12 months. At this point in time, you don't really have any inclination of how long you'll be in this role. You haven't been briefed by council with anything in that regard?
Well, I think council wants to move quickly. So they've told us, deputy managers, that they're looking to move quick. So I think 6 months is probably a little out of the question. That's a pretty quick recruitment when you're looking at something that you do global recruitment for. So this is not something that's like just inside the city, the province of Alberta. Like when you go to CEO positions, they're global recruitment. So that will take a bit of time, I'm sure. So, you know, I'm looking anywhere from 6 months to a year, and that would be moving quick. Obviously, we just recruited for the city auditor. That took about a year to do. I think they're hoping to move faster than that, but we'll see. I'm not kind of, my contract right now is a bit open-ended until the new person comes in. So obviously, if you get closer to an election too, that complicates things. So we'll see how long it takes. I'm not going to predict or even imagine, pretend to imagine. I'm just going to own this seat while I got it and see what we can do in the city to make it a better place for Edmontonians.
Well, we wish you all the best in your new role and thank you again for coming to share some insight with us and our listeners.
Segment alert. It's the rapid fire segment. Virgin Radio's Jenna Winterburn has started a petition to stop singer Brett Kissel from performing the anthem at Oilers games, claiming the Oilers have lost most of the playoff games where he has performed. When asked about the petition, the country singer was confused and thought we were asking about the petition he released, one demanding that the communist Trudeau be moved by truck convoy to Cuba so Canada can finally have freedom again. A new ePark mobile payment system has been rolled out in which City of Edmonton employees will break into your house at night and take any cash you have in-house as prepayment for parking. For convenience, if any citizen would like their money back, they need only submit a simple 30-page questionnaire in triplicate to the Office of the Parking Authority in person between 9:15 and 10:04 a.m. Monday, Sunday, and every sixth Tuesday of the month, 2 blocks west of 4 blocks south of the intersection at coordinates 53 degrees, 33 minutes, 5.8 seconds north, 113 degrees, 29 minutes, and 8.9 seconds west. Alberta Premier Danielle Smith has announced a new provincial rail strategy, saying, quote, "We want to ensure Albertans have transportation options that allow us to build more dense, walkable urban forms and align with our climate goals in a sustainable, forward-thinking way." And you know, we need rail to allow Edmontonians to escape from woke city council pet projects like bike lanes and Blatchford. Until next week, I'm Troy.
I'm Mac.
I'm Eddie.
And we're
Speaking Municipally.